From the halls of every school in Michigan, this is School Talks on 760 WJR with Dr. Robert Livernoy. Sponsored by Wakely Associates, Plant Moran, Real Point, Collins and Plaha, O'Reilly Rancilio PC Attorneys at Law, Clark Construction, and by Must Construction Careers. Now, take your seats. Class is in session. Here's Robert.
With schools closed during the summer, there is a lot of bond construction work going on in Michigan public schools, and a major part of that work are the many associations who support the people doing the work. We will be joined by Jennifer Mefford from the National Electrical Contractors Association, Dan Patera, the president of AIA Michigan, which is the American Institute of Architects, Kevin Kohler, the president of the Construction Association of Michigan, and Mark Saba, the executive director of SMACNA Detroit, which is the Sheet Metal and Air Conditioning Contractors National Association. All this and more coming up. This is School Talks on 760 WJR.
This is School Talks on WJR with Dr. Robert Livernoy.
Joining us now on the program is Jennifer Mefford from the National Electrical Contractors Association, which obviously is an organization here dedicated to enhancing the industry through a number of avenues in the electrical industry. And I want to welcome you to the program, Jennifer.
Thanks for having me.
So I think a good place to start would be, what are the main goals and the mission of the chapter here in Michigan of NECA?
So NECA represents electrical contractors, and there are about 220 electrical contractors based in Southeast Michigan that are under the purview of NECA. There are 45 of those that are exclusively NECA member contractors. Robert, these are some of the largest electrical contractors in the Midwest or the country. Southeast Michigan is known for its high level of skilled trade, so not unusual that we have a lot of those based here.
Mm-hmm. How does NECA collaborate with what we hear a lot on the radio, the IBEW Local 58 group? How do they work together?
So all of the NECA contractors exclusively utilize the workforce of IBEW Local 58 here in this region. So they're part of a national network, so each market across the country has a different NECA and a different local union, but that's the one here.
And you know, in my time as superintendent in Warren, the as we used to call it, the 58 Training Center was in our school district. And for people who live in that area to drive by it, you wouldn't have even a remote understanding of what is actually in that building,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Given how sort of cutting edge and innovative it is. So on that note, can you discuss the types of training and continuing education opportunities NECA provides for their members?
Sure. The training center that you mentioned is a labor management collaboration between NECA and IBEW. They jointly fund that training center, so it's all private funding. Every man hour that's worked in the market actually contributes to that training. So they train apprentices there at that facility. They have an inside sound and communication and residential program. NECA specifically focuses on, at the chapter level, contractor education. The electrical industry is changing every day in terms of new technology, whether it's in sound and communication, data, security, cybersecurity, the use of AI in construction. So NECA has a continuing education series for their contractors to keep them kind of on that cutting edge.
It seems somewhat obvious, but what are some of the more recent initiatives or events or projects in the area that have had a significant impact on your members?
Yeah, I think the interesting thing as I'm downtown with you today is just looking around. You can see all the towers in the air and just all the construction that's happening down here. Our contractors, we have many on the Gordie Howe Bridge, of course, Double Jack Electric. I know this week they're turning the lights on, testing all the lighting on the bridge. They worked on that project. But as you sit down town and you look at all the stadiums, all the hospital facilities, universities, commercial properties, a NECA contractor had a footprint in that. So from Michigan Central Station all over and just multiple that across the region. So these are contractors that are focused mostly, probably 80 or 90% in the industrial, public, and commercial space. They do a little bit of residential, some multi-unit dwellings. So we've seen a huge housing surge in the city of Detroit as well. And NECA contractors are involved there too.
I tell my children all the time, there's two signs that a city has come back and is doing well. One is the number of cranes you see in the air, and two, how heavy the traffic is coming in and out of the city.
You're so right.
Mm-hmm. And both of those are well underway here in the city.
It's been super, and we're really going to be seeing that for the next several years. So we feel like this construction growth in and around the city and really Southeast Michigan region, we have many, many, many years of that to come.
You know, on that same note, when you think about what drives an economy, you have all of the workers down here doing the work, creating housing for people, new businesses and so on, and all of those places generate an economy that turns around and gets spent in other places, and excuse the term, it really is a positive snowball effect.
Yes, absolutely.
How does NECA support the recruitment and development of people into the electrical industry?
Yeah, so really along two pathways. So, of course, we have the training center where we recruit for field electricians and data technicians. They partner with IBW on that initiative. But NECA itself has really focused in the last several years on talent for the contractors. So if you think about all of our contractor firms, you know, some, the smallest might have 10 folks that work at the contractor level and hundreds of electricians. The largest of our firms probably have 400 folks that work at the firm itself. So NECA launched what they call the NECA Careers Portal, where an individual can upload their resume, smcnecacareers.com, and it's viewed by 45 of the NECA contractors. So these are for positions, Robert, like accounting, office management, supportive services, all the admin that it takes, project managers, estimators, warehouse folks, stock people, to keep that contractors ecosystem going. And that's been a very successful program for NECA, because I think when people think about electrical contractors, they can think about electricians, right? But there's a whole other world of career opportunities, and they're super great careers on the contractor side.
What a great analogy to it takes a village to, you know, do electrical work.
Yes, when
you
for
consider,
sure.
Much like a school district, away from the teacher in the classroom,
yes,
there
mm-hmm.
is an incredible army of people behind them making sure everything is in order. So we're currently with Jennifer Mefford from the National Electrical Contractors Association here in Detroit. And you mentioned opportunities for workers in that. And I understand NECA has some type of scholarship program. Could you share that a little bit with our listeners?
Yeah, so NECA contractors are truly some of the most generous people I think I've ever met. They support lots of different charities in the market, but they also created a scholarship fund for folks that are interested in getting continuing education in the construction industry. This could be an associate degree to support project management. It could be a construction management degree to grow your career. It really varies. And it's they over since 2003 have raised just under $1 million that they have given out in scholarships each year. We just had a golf outing and raised about $20,000 that went right to that scholarship program. But they're always doing these fundraising events throughout the year, and I just think it's a great give back. Of course, it's helping them also develop talent that mm-hmm. for their industry, but you know, again, they're a very generous group, and I think the scholarship fund is a super program.
And you mentioned, you said it was 2003?
Yes.
So think of that from a timetable with the resurgence of the city, which started really about 10 years ago, to get a group in the early 2000s trained and ready to do the work.
Yeah.
Some really good, as we say in education, anticipatory thinking, for
exactly.
sure. So how does NECA help its members, given all of the different people associated? How do you help keep them informed on any number of things, whether it's regulation changes or updates to laws and such?
Mm-hmm. It really is a continuous communication and education series at NECA. You know, they have a great foundation of policy work and events, of course. Technology is a huge change, a constant change cycle for NECA contractors. So there are certainly biweekly and monthly education series. Contractors will come into the chapter. Speakers, national level speakers are booked. And it's really kind of the latest and greatest. They also do deep dives on foreman training and supervision leadership training. So because the labor market is so tight, a lot of those folks in the last, I would say, 5 years as the market has tightened up are really the best candidates come out of the field. And then they're trained while they're actually kind of coming into that leadership role at the firm.
And those are the best kinds of leaders.
They
those
are,
who have
yes,
done
they
the work.
They can see both sides and they can see everything that's happening in that project just naturally. And that's perfect.
We call it the end user to the leadership position. So
yes.
Jennifer Mefford from the National Electrical Contractors Association, thanks for stopping by School Talks. And as always, keep up the great work.
Thank you.
Coming up after a word from our sponsors, we'll chat with Dan Patera, president of the Michigan AIA. Stay right there. We'll be back right after this.
The This is School Talks on WJR with Dr. Robert Livernoy, sponsored by Wakely Associates, Plant Moran, Real Point, Collins and Plaha, O'Reilly Rancilio PC Attorneys at Law, Clark Construction, and by Must Construction Careers. Once again at the head of the class, Dr. Livernoy.
Welcome back to School Talks. Before we get to our next guest, I'd like to share with our listeners a bit about what architects do in schools as part of school construction. Architects play a central role in shaping the projects to meet the evolving needs of students and staff, particularly when it comes to things like heating and cooling, technology, and safety. Their work is critical from the earliest planning stages through to the final design and construction phases. Over the years, I've had the opportunity to work with one of our core sponsors, Wakely Associates Architects, and they have taught me so much about the role that architects play. I've watched them and many others over the years collaborate with engineers and contractors to ensure that HVAC systems are not only efficient, but also support the health and comfort of everyone in the building. They help design systems that provide proper ventilation, air filtration, and temperature control. All of these are essential for good indoor air quality. Many modern school designs often incorporate advanced features such as displacement ventilation, which supplies fresh outdoor air and reduces recirculation and improves air quality and the eventual maintenance needs of the air handling system. Architects also ensure that maintenance access to these kinds of units is considered so that equipment can be serviced without disrupting the school environment. When it comes to technology integration, architects are a fundamental part of school life and design. They are responsible for integrating the necessary infrastructure into the building design. This includes planning for robust electrical systems, data networks, and spaces that support digital learning tools. High-tech K-12 schools require careful coordination to accommodate everything from classroom computers to specialized lab equipment, and architects ensure that these needs are met without compromising safety or comfort. In fact, they work closely with technology specialists to future-proof buildings, allowing for upgrades and new technologies as they emerge. Just think of that for a moment. What technology was popular 5 years ago is most likely outdated today. So when an architect designs something for a school, they have to anticipate that this field is going to continually evolve and the school itself has to be able to keep up with that demand. In terms of safety and security, architects are at the top priority of the school design process. They often use strategies like crime prevention through environmental design. This is a system that creates environments that are secure yet welcoming. This includes designing for natural surveillance, controlled access, and clear territorial reinforcement to distinguish public from private spaces. Architects collaborate with school administrators and security experts to implement layered security measures. Many of you might be aware of local schools that have secure entryways or lockdown zones or mass notification systems. All of that is designed and implemented through the architectural process. In my career as a superintendent, one of the most common sense recommendations that came from our architects was to number the doors of the school building. And if you take a drive by just about any school in the area, you'll notice that each door of the school has a number above it. And inside the school, there's a number that corresponds on the inside to the number on the outside. And what that does is, in, God forbid, a crisis situation, a person within a room can tell the emergency responders what door number they are located at, which makes the emergency response that much more efficient. So overall, architects are essential partners in school construction and bringing together expertise in HVAC, technology, and safety, all to create buildings that are healthy, modern, and secure. And with that, joining us now on the program is Dan Patera, the president of the American Institute of Architects in Michigan, as what we know as affectionately as AIA Michigan. And he's also a professor and dean at the University of Detroit Mercy School of Architecture and Community Development. Welcome to the program, Dan.
Thank you, Robert. It's truly a pleasure to be here with you.
I appreciate that. So in our program today, we're focusing on all of the associations that support the industry at large, whether it's construction, architecture, and obviously in your role through AIA Michigan, it is a substantial one. And I think a good place to start is, what is the core mission you're leading for AIA of Michigan?
Thank you, Robert. That is a great question to start with, because we're undergoing this year a strategic planning process moving us into the next 5 years. Our strategic plan ends 2025, and we're moving into a 2026 to 2030 strategic plan. Currently, our vision is to advance society through architecture, and our mission is to champion the profession and to nurture our chapters and section to ultimately build a better Michigan. Thoughtful and well-designed spaces are nothing without people. Our spaces shape who we are, and the architects shape those spaces. I've lived all over the country and worked all over the country. I've been in Detroit since 1998, and I truly believe that Michigan architects are some of the best and most thoughtful in the country, if not the world. And so we should be amplifying this for the state, but also for the nation.
So in your role as president, I'm curious, what kinds of resources do you provide even the smallest of firms or others who may be emerging in the industry?
AI Michigan should be seen as a powerful knowledge resource and a connector. Large firms often have the infrastructure to research and to exchange knowledge. Emerging professionals in small firms lack that depth that perhaps that infrastructure can offer or bring. So through continuing education, seminars, through conferences, networking, AI Michigan is like having a firm of a few thousand people at your disposal as a small firm or emerging professional.
So in that same line of thinking, what are some of the, I guess we would consider, recent achievements or ongoing projects that really demonstrates AIA's impact on the industry here in Michigan?
AI Michigan, in the last decade or so, we have affected policy change at the state level at least 15 times. 15 policies have been passed within the last decade. We started a statewide conference that we call ArchiFusion. Last year it was in Lansing. This year it'll be Detroit. It's going to travel around the state. And it is a place that brings all of us together for continuing ed, but really to be that large firm, if you will, that I mentioned earlier.
We're currently chatting with Dan Patera, the president of the American Institute of Architects here in Michigan. And also he is the president and dean of University of Detroit Mercy School of Architecture and Community Development. So, Dan, I want to follow up on something you mentioned with regard to professional development and so on. The architects who come, or architects who are members of AIA, are they provided regular opportunities to get together and network?
Yes.
And how does that intersect across the state?
Every week, the architects get an email that gives them what's happened in the past week. So we have weekly minutes, weekly emails. We then have monthly newsletters that talks about the issues of the time, where we've been, where we're going. We then have virtual town halls, either on Zoom or through telephone. And then, as I mentioned earlier, we have four focus conferences. One that focuses on policymaking, we call Legislation Day in Lansing. We have one that's focused on healthcare facilities. It happens typically in April. And then a conference that connects architects with contractors in Mackinac in August, and a design retreat that occurs in September, usually in northern Michigan, that's at a YMCA camp that allows us to let our shirts out and chat in a one-to-one. And then I've already mentioned the ArchiFusion conference, which is what brings us all together.
Earlier, you mentioned the importance of the chapters. Help our School Talks listeners understand, what are the main chapters and sections of AI Michigan, and how do they collaborate across the state?
Great question. Currently, we have five chapters and five sections. A chapter is essentially self-sustaining. It has its own financial and legal operations, where a section leans on AI Michigan for legal and financial processes and so on. They range from Upper Peninsula to a chapter of Detroit, Grand Rapids, Huron Valley, Mid-Michigan. Some will collaborate because of adjacency, and some will collaborate because of need for a knowledge base, if you will.
Fantastic. Dan Patera, the president of the American Institute of Architects here in Michigan, and also professor and dean at Detroit Mercy School of Architecture and Community Development. Thank you so much for your time on School Talks today. I appreciate it. And as always, keep up the good work.
Thank you very much, Robert. Truly a pleasure to be here today. Thank you.
After a word from our sponsors, we'll chat with Kevin Kohler from the Construction Association of Michigan. This is 760 WJR.
School Talks on WJR with Dr. Robert Livernoy.
Joining us now in the program is Kevin Kohler, the president of the Construction Association of Michigan. Welcome to the program, Kevin.
Thank you, Dr. Livernoy. Glad to be here.
So as I understand it, it's known in the business as CAM. Has quite a long history here in Michigan, and I was hoping you could tell us a little bit about the services you provide and the types of construction industry projects you work with and give our listeners a good sense of what the association is all about.
Sure. So CAM was founded in 1885. Now, I've been with CAM for 40 years, so I can't go all the way back to 1885, but I can give you a brief history. Back in 1885, they didn't build with steel. In fact, most construction was done with block. Some form of concrete and a little bit of wood. So at the time, it was called the Builders Exchange of Detroit and Vicinity, and it was founded by 21 Mason contractors right here in the city of Detroit. And really, they got the association together so they would have a common clearinghouse to share information on construction projects that were going out for bid. And then on our centennial in 1985, we changed the name from the Builders Exchange to Construction Association of Michigan, being more reminiscent of the industry that we served, which is the state of Michigan.
You know, a core sponsor of School Talks is MUST, Construction
Sure.
Careers. And I know you're an integral part of the groups they represent and network with. And I was wondering if you could share with us how you collaborate and network among what I would consider as a pretty diverse group of membership, including anyone from contractors to architects, et cetera. How do you navigate that collaboration?
That's a great question. So CAM as an organization is a little unique in the fact that we have all jurisdictions of construction. So we have architects, we have service firms to the industry, we have general contractors, and we have all types of subcontractors. So a lot of associations are single focus, like they're for the electrical contracts or mechanical. We have the whole industry, so it gives us a chance to bring the industry together to collaborate and address the problems of the entire industry, maybe not specifically one aspect of that industry. And we're happy to be a member of MUST. One of my employees sits on the board of MUST, and we're very involved with that organization.
Seems like a good term for your group among all of these is somewhat of an umbrella that covers quite a few of these different components in construction. Help our listeners understand, what is the mission of CAM? And in your role as president, how does it guide your priorities and initiatives for the group?
You know, that's a great question. And incidentally, we just redid our mission statement. We had some strategic planning. And so I'll tell you, the mission is that CAM provides a vast resource of services, information, and training to our diverse members within Michigan's construction industry. And we act as a catalyst to promote and enhance profitability, efficiency, and integrity within that industry. What I like to say, and it's really our vision statement that makes more sense to me, it's one industry, one resource, one CAM. And what I mean by that is everybody in construction is in one industry. And we want to be the resource for that industry, whether it's safety training or education or labor negotiations or finding out information on construction projects. We publish a slick glossy monthly magazine mm-hmm. that goes out to the industry, you know, highlighting some of the great work that our contractors do here in the state of Michigan.
You know, anyone coming downtown can see just a boatload of construction projects going on, from the Gordie Howe Bridge to the new Hudson Tower to right behind us here at the Fisher Building, the Henry Ford projects, and so on. And when you drive by it, I think many people don't have an appreciation for how much is actually going on simultaneously on a job site. You might see a few people working and whatnot, but it is quite a busy environment. And through your role in CAM, what types of things do you do to promote safety and provide safety training in the workplace?
Sure. So the logistics, it's interesting you say that, because driving down here made me feel great to see three or four tower cranes. We've got Destination Grand going up across the street. they're working on the old GM building, and right here in the Fisher building's being refurbished. And they're all camp contractors, which, by the way, is fantastic. And we have a camp safety committee. It does nothing but promote safety. We have an alliance with Myosha, so our contractors can take advantage of that. We can call Myosha in as on a consultancy level, not so much on an enforcement level. And it helps the contractors understand where they can improve on safety, which is hugely important. And then our training programs, like through Camp Tech, our training education center, we run scheduling programs because, as you just mentioned, this is a huge scheduling nightmare for these big contractors. And they could have two or three job sites going simultaneously, too. So scheduling becomes very important, and that's one of the programs that we offer through Camp Tech.
Not to mention the challenge of vertical construction. I watch these buildings go straight up in the air, and just the intersection of all these different people and groups and so on is truly amazing.
Yeah, they have those tower lifts that take everything straight up. And oftentimes, the buildings, if they're being refurbished, the elevators are shut down, so they have exterior cladding to take the elevator up. It's amazing what they can do.
So we're currently with Kevin Kohler, the president of the Construction Association of Michigan, talking about all things related to his association and what they represent to the industry. Kevin, I want to follow up. Aside from this sort of job site stuff that goes on, how does CAM advocate for the interests of your members, either at the local, state, or even, God forbid we use this word, at the political level? How do you get involved with that?
Well, we have a full-time lobbying firm that does nothing but lobby on behalf of construction. They're in Lansing all the time. The firm that we use is KDA, Kinsvetter Dowling Associates. We have a government affairs committee. We have a PAC, and we have some other political action committees put together. And really, we're looking at legislation that affects our industry. And oftentimes, because CAM is such a diverse group, we may have to stand neutral on certain topics. But there are topics like the Michigan Construction Payment Act, which we currently are pushing to get contractors paid in a timely fashion. And I'll just take one moment on that. So when you think about schoolwork, that's all public work. It's bonded. And contractors are paid in a timely fashion. But on private jobs, when people are working on, you know, private construction projects, there is no payment term, basically, other than the term that's signed in the contract. And oftentimes, it can be 120-day delayed payment, 200-day delayed payment. And for a small subcontractor who's paying their fringe benefits, who's, you know, buying material for the job or fronting that material, it's important to get paid in a timely fashion. So that's something the whole industry is behind and we're pushing.
And I would imagine some of those smaller groups would have to take loans to meet their obligations until they get paid.
Absolutely.
Which indirectly cuts into the profits.
It's a slippery slope. Absolutely.
Sure. Yeah, I understand also CAM acquired something known as Tri-Cities. Can you share with us what that's about?
So Tri-Cities, back in the early, I think it was mid-2000s, is a small builders exchange up in the Saginaw, Flint, Bay City area. And we had the opportunity to actually acquire them. They were privately owned. And we bought the organization and brought them under the CAM umbrella. CAM is the oldest construction association of its kind in the country, and we are the largest as well. We're the largest regional construction association in all of North America.
It certainly pays dividend to be working in a really old and a historic city such as Detroit and the surrounding area. So,
isn't it wonderful to see what's going on? All the train station, the Fisher building now, and, you know, just...
I've been coming downtown for 40 years since I started college, and the resurgence of the city is remarkable. Mm-hmm. And I think about all the people doing the work to bring it back. It's one of those things that's right in front of you, but you often don't see it. So, Kevin Kohler, president of the Construction Association of Michigan, appreciate your time today and sharing with us a bit of the great work you're doing. And as always, keep up the great work.
Thank you very much, Dr. Lurie. Glad to be here.
After the break, we'll chat with Mark Sabaugh from SMACNA Detroit. Stay right there. We'll be back right after this.
Talks on WJR is sponsored by Wakely Associates, Plant Moran, Real Point, Collins and Plaha, O'Reilly Rancilio PC Attorneys at Law, Clark Construction, and by Must Construction Careers. Now let's get back to class. Once again, your host, former Superintendent Dr. Robert Livernoy.
Joining us now on the program is Mark Sabaugh from SMACNA. Welcome to the program, Mark.
Thank you.
And I'd like to leave it to you to tell our listeners, what is SMACNA?
So SMACNA is a chapter, one of over 100 chapters around the country. SMACNA stands for Sheet Metal Air Conditioning Contractors National Association. And again, we represent over 75 companies in our chapter alone. And we take care of you in the winter and we take care of you in the summer.
Great slogan. So what's the primary mission of SMACNA under your leadership there?
So, really, we like to collaborate with our union partners, Local 80. And it's funny because, you know, 8 years ago, I was a business manager for Sheet Metal Workers Local 80 and then moved over to the management side. But there's we're both well-respected working together, and that's definitely a recipe for success. And that's what we do, working with our labor partners to make sure that the job's done safely, in proper manner, and under budget.
In terms of safety, you mentioned, what types of technical standards and codes does SMACNA in the Detroit area, how do you help develop and implement them so that they help the quality and safety of the projects you're working on?
So, great question. And we are very concerned with safety and the health of all of our members, of course. There is technical standards that we use throughout the country that SMACNA will adopt. But I'm really proud of a program that we collaborated with our labor partners, and it's a ready-to-work program where we follow all the OSHA rules. Everybody is drug tested. They watch a video once a year to make sure that if there's anything like a closed space where they're working or up high, anything that has to do with the industry, we have an approach that these not only apprentices but journeymen get to go through to make sure that they're ready to go and ready to work.
And given the scope of the industry, as you said, can you describe the range of services and specialties that SMACNA provides to contractors in the area?
Yeah. So, as you know, we do it not only residential, industrial, commercial, and our specialty with some of our companies is architectural. If you look at some of the buildings downtown Detroit, the train station is one of them. Look at the architecture on the outside. That is all done by Sheet Metal Workers Local 80 from this area. We also take care of technical standards, any changes in the industry. We bring our people in from Washington. They'll have a class with some of the engineers and make sure they're up to date on all the new codes.
One of our primary sponsors on School Talks is Must Construction Careers, and we try as often as we can to share all of the different training and apprenticeship opportunities that are available to students coming out of high school or even people who want to change careers. And for SMACNA, what educational and training opportunities do you provide for contractors and maybe supervisors and others on jobs?
So, as you know, the apprenticeship program is a four-year program. And anytime there's any change in the industry as far as what we're doing or where we're going, we would have a class for that. The students could come in, take a class, take a night course, as well as supervisors and foremen for different companies. We offer that programs for them too as well. And as you know, a lot of people think sheet metal is this pound and duck. Well, it's not. It's definitely a new standard now. There's balancing. There's computer work. There's so many different facets of the industry. It's not just pound and duck together like people think in the old days.
It's not just
definitely the students coming out of school look at it and say, hey, you know what? Why go to? I mean, college is great. Don't get me wrong. But if you're not college bound, you 4 years in the trades, you're going to make over $100,000 a year, and you're going to come out ready to go. So,
And be supported.
And be supported, exactly. Yeah. And plus, when you look at our trade, you have a great pension, great health insurance, and that's where I got to work on both sides of the table. And watching these contractors, especially in our chapter, take care of the local union people with their pension and health insurance, they really care.
So let me give you a question related to what you just said. When you go into a typical building, you often don't see any of the heating and cooling stuff other than the vent in the ceiling. Is there a trend lately to have more exposed ductwork? Like you see some of these restaurants downtown that have exposed that must just be a style thing. Would you agree?
There is, and depending on what the engineer draws up, if you look downtown, there's a lot of buildings where you have the exposed duct, and it's not just ductwork. It's that, like you said, it's more of a engagement and of how the building's built. And if you look at the architecture, we have, like I say, Cass is one of our big employees for the architectural sheet metal, and they do a lot of work in the downtown area where it's all exposed, as you can see. Mm-hmm. It's definitely different than back in the day.
We're currently with Mark Saba from SMACNA here in Detroit. And Mark, I want to follow up on job site and training opportunities and ask you a little bit about how you promote safety and best practices in this industry, just given not only how much of it's going on right now, but I imagine you have quite a few people up on scaffolds and cranes.
Yeah, we do. And like I said, the program that we instituted with labor and management is a ready-to-work program. And we make sure that everybody coming out of the union hall that's going to go to work is ready to go. And when I say ready to go, I mean they have their OSHA testing, they have their drug testing, and there's nothing that we're going to miss to make them unsafe on the job site. So anybody that comes out of the hall is ready to go. All their standards, everything's taken care of, like I say, with the OSHA and with MUST, they're ready to go to work. And we kind of police that to make sure that anybody that's hiring these, you know, individuals are ready to go so they're safe.
Does SMACNA interface at all with a national level?
We do.
And if so, does the national group offer any types of conventions or things that your members can participate in?
Yeah, we have one coming up this year, of course, and it'll be in Hawaii. Really, it's going to be tough to take. And we're really excited about this convention because one of our own, Todd Hill from VenCon, will be nominated as president and appointed president. First time in over 40 years that we've had a Detroit contractor as president of SMACNA National. So, yes, it's a definitely a good program. There's a lot of our members come, a lot of our associate members. They have classes for every individual. They do safety classes and, you know, anything to do with the industry, breakout sessions. It's a great convention. We do it once a year.
And as a group, how has SMACNA evolved over time? As you mentioned, the industry changes and that. What are things you can point to that have changed over time based on the industry?
I think just the way we approach work. We've have a motto in with our management and labor side, together we do it better. I think people are understanding more and more that working together is a recipe for success. Mm-hmm. And if we can get labor management on the same page, which I think we've done a great job, that's where I think you're going to see that change, where we're not looking one against the other, we're looking to work together.
And, you know, it truly represents, when you work together like that, everyone's successful.
Everybody's successful,
and,
exactly.
And I think about your apprenticeship program. Do you provide both in-class instruction as well as out in the field?
Yep. So we have a training center where they go to school. It's a four-year program. The first year is where they're doing more of the schooling, and then they break off and they're working at companies, so they're getting paid to go to school and to learn on the job site.
Mm-hmm.
That's a recipe for success. That's great.
A win-win. And what was your saying? Help you stay cold when you need it, or what was that?
You'll be cool in the summer and warm in the winter.
Mark Saba from SMACNA here in Detroit, thanks so much for stopping by School Talks and giving us a perspective on the great work you're doing. And as always, keep up that great work. Yeah. I appreciate it.
I want to thank you too as well, and Prudence and MUST for really working with us together with all the chapters to make sure that you get the message. Thank you.
That will do it for today's program. I'd like to thank our guests today, Jennifer Mefford, Dan Patera, Kevin Kohler, and Mark Saba, for a wonderful conversation about all of the associations who support the great work going on in our city and across the entire state. That's all the time we have for today, but remember, there are two ways to spell one and three ways to spell two. Till next time, this has been School Talks on 760 WJR.